Jeff.
We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
1, 2, 3.
Bullshit.
Welcome to Tide Run Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Bethay. Falcons fans, it's happened. We have actually signed a good player, and they play quarterback. It is time for Falcons fans everywhere to rejoice. If you're new to the show, please make sure to like and subscribe. You can follow us on social media, Facebook and Twitter, and you can email us, titlerunsports@gmail.com. So, I have been banging the drum for the Falcons to sign Kirk Cousins since, October, November, when it was very, very clear that Desmond Ridder was not the answer. Some people like Russ Mills will say it was clear after four games of his rookie year. I gave him a little bit more time, but either way, the people that said that Ridder didn't have it were right. He was not the answer at quarterback. And I, back then in the fall, started saying that we should pony up the money for Kirk Cousins. Achilles injury be darned, but that he was easily, by far, the best option for the Falcons. The Falcons did it. They wrote the big check. They gave him his money. And the Falcons have a competent starting quarterback again. This was 100% the right move, and if you don't believe that, you will probably have your mind changed by the end of this podcast. So let me start with this first question that we're going to address. Why should you be excited about Kirk Cousins and the rest of the Falcons offseason? We'll start with Cousins. Number one, he was the best quarterback on the market. And this is a fact that nobody's really disputing. Even detractors of Kirk Cousins acknowledge that he was the best option on this rather weak market. But the complaints were either that he hasn't won enough in the playoffs, he was going to cost too much, or that he was coming off an Achilles injury, which to some extent are fair concerns. But here's why I think this was the right choice. Number one, Kirk Cousins always has his teams competitive. In his last 6 years as a part of the Minnesota Vikings, career record in games that he started was 50-37-1. The Vikings only had one losing season with Kirk Cousins at quarterback. That was in 2020, which, you know, is the weird COVID year. His average record while he was a starting quarterback, if you count the five full seasons he had, was 9-7. His completion percentage during his 6 years in Minnesota was 68%. He averaged just under 4,000 yards a season, and that's including last year where he only played 8 games. So if you were to extrapolate his career average in Minnesota over 17 games, so literally, how many yards do they average per every 17 games? It's just under 4,300 yards. It's 4,295 yards to be exact. That's what he averaged per 17 games in Minnesota. So essentially, the average Kirk Cousins season is 67% completion percentage, 9-7 record, 29 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, 264 yards per game, and a 101 QB rating. He made 3 Pro Bowls in Minnesota. He led 14 fourth quarter comebacks, and he had 16 game-winning drives. So, that's what you're getting. When you hear those numbers, they sound a whole lot like a former Atlanta quarterback, don't they? Sound a whole lot like a guy named Matt Ryan. Now, the concern about the injury to Cousins' Achilles is a real concern. He'll be entering his age 36 season. He's coming off a major surgery. But my counter to that is, A, it's the first major injury of Cousins' career. Prior to this past season, he had missed 0 career starts due to injury. His only missed career start was, I believe, one in 2021 due to COVID. Somebody can fact check me on that. He's been extraordinarily durable. And while the Achilles injury is a major surgery, it's happening to a guy who doesn't rely on mobility or athleticism, and other players have come back from it. Dan Marino famously came back in his age 33 season from the injury and threw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. So I think the injury concern is a little bit overblown. Obviously, I do know that if he gets hurt, the Falcons are screwed because you're back to Taylor Heinicke at quarterback since we just traded away Desmond Ridder. But I think that concern is overblown, and we consider the fact that his teams are always competitive. He's super productive. He wins a lot of games. He's accurate. He's smart. He's playing in a system that he would be familiar with because this is another coach in Zach Robinson who is off the Sean McVay coaching tree, as was his head coach in Minnesota, Kevin O'Connell. And Cousins said the familiarity, in addition to the money, and the fact that his wife is from Alpharetta, and apparently he spent tons of time here in Atlanta over the years, which I did not know, were all contributing factors to him coming here. Now, we also have the Falcons fans, a small contingent of them, that are crying that we did not get Justin Fields. And this is where I'm going to dunk on Justin Fields, and I hate to say this because it's a kid I really like, and he's a player I think is really talented. But you Falcons fans that wanted him, I think were delusional, and I post the evidence why on Facebook if you haven't seen the post. I put up a graphic comparing Justin Fields' 2023-24 season to Desmond Ridder's 2023-24 season and Marcus Mariota's 2022-23 season. Fields played 13 games because he was hurt for 4 games and missed them. And long story short, he had the same record and starts as Marcus Mariota did. He had essentially the same completion percentage as Mariota. Ridder had a higher completion percentage. Fields, in 13 games, had 300 more yards than Mariota, less yards than Ridder, who played 2 additional games. In yards per game, he averaged 8 more passing yards per game than Ridder. He had 16 passing touchdowns to 15 for Mariota in the same number of games, the same number of interceptions as Mariota, a lower quarterback rating than both Mariota and Ridder, and obviously he surpassed both of them in rushing yards with 657 this past season, while Mariota had 438 the year before. And this is a nice, juicy stat to add on. Desmond Ridder had 3 300-yard games this season. Justin Fields, for his career, has 1. Now, what that does not include is the fact that Fields had 10 fumbles this past year. I think he only lost 1, which is amazing. And for his career, in 38 career starts, Fields has 41 career turnovers, 40 career touchdowns, and 30 career interceptions. In addition to that, Fields has missed 25% of his career starts, 13 out of 51, due to injury. So in Fields, the reason that I was not a fan is that despite his talent, and despite the fact that he's played in an abysmal situation in Chicago, which nobody will deny, he has been hurt. When he's been healthy, he's turned the ball over at an alarming rate, and he hasn't produced. 16 touchdowns to 9 interceptions isn't great no matter what team you're playing for. And the Chicago Bears are 10-28 in his career starts. 10-28! And so when I post this, the pushback I get from people that support Justin Fields are that he's been in a horrible situation, and comparing him to Ridder and Mariota isn't fair because they had more talent. There's no question they had more talent. I was simply comparing him to Falcons quarterbacks that everybody thought sucked and showing that his numbers were basically the same as theirs. Some people said, well, this proves that he's better than them and we should want him more. To which my point was, yes, this proves that he's better than 2 quarterbacks that everybody thinks are horrible and wanted gone. In fact, are both now gone. And don't tell me about how bad a situation is when other quarterbacks on equally horrible teams, aka Sam Howell, threw for 21 touchdowns and nearly 4,000 yards. Now, Howell also had 21 turnovers, which is why he just got traded to the Seahawks. But there are other quarterbacks with bad situations that are putting up better numbers. Now, my other issue is, even though Fields has not had a good offensive line, he was given a 1,000-yard receiver this past year in DJ Moore, a guy who put up 3 1,000-yard receiving seasons in Carolina with a revolving door quarterback. He also had Darnell Mooney, a guy who Fields' rookie year had 1,000 yards, and then once Fields took over as full-time starter, saw his production cut in half the next 2 seasons. And he had Cole Kmet, a guy who's averaged 50 yards a catch in 4 seasons in the NFL. So while Fields has been playing behind a bad offensive line with a revolving door at head coach and offensive coordinator, and all those things are legitimate reasons why he hasn't been as good as he should be, why does he have a worse completion percentage and worse per-game numbers than guys like Easton Stick and Jake Browning, and comparable numbers to a guy like Joshua Dobbs, who got fired from Arizona halfway through the season and had to pick up Minnesota and then got benched there? He shouldn't be putting up numbers equal to lifetime backup quarterbacks if you're going to tell me that this is somebody we're going to trade assets for. I 100% believe that Justin Fields has talent. I believe that he could go to a new situation and be really good. I also believe he could go to a new situation and be the exact same quarterback that he's been, which is a below average starter. So if Justin Fields was a free agent, to me it's a different conversation. I'd be willing to give him a shot in a new environment with better personnel, better coaching, and a more stable situation to see if he can excel. But for a guy that's been hurt, hasn't won, hasn't been productive, and hasn't protected football, why am I trading for that guy? I already have a turnover-prone quarterback. I just got rid of him. I don't need another one. So I hate to throw cold water on the Justin Fields stuff. I never thought that was a viable option. I would not have been happy had the Falcons done it. And even though I still do think he could be a starting quarterback that is good somewhere, I don't think that we were in the position to take that gamble on him at this point. Especially when you consider his contract. He only makes $9 million for this upcoming year, but you have to make a decision on his fifth-year option, which was $25 million, and that decision was due on May 2nd. So with Justin Fields, you were going to trade, oh, I don't know, we'll say a fourth and a sixth-round pick for him. You're going to have to decide whether or not to give him $25 million guaranteed dollars for 2025 before he ever throws a pass for you. And again, that's a high risk that I simply don't think was worth it at this stage in the Falcons franchise history. Now, the flip side of that is people are pointing out that us giving Kirk Cousins the contract that we did was a high-risk move also. And to some extent, I understand that because when you see the raw numbers, you're thinking, how in the world is Kirk Cousins getting this money? My buddy Matt Whitaker put it best. He said, Kirk Cousins might be the most highly paid non-elite quarterback of all time. Because at least a guy like Matt Ryan gave you the MVP season and probably should have won a Super Bowl if we could, you know, be competent on defense for like 5 minutes. And Kirk Cousins is probably very, very similar to Matt Ryan, but he hasn't put together a Matt Ryan-level season. And granted, that's because he hasn't had Kyle Shanahan as his OC. But the point being, everybody kind of thinks it's Kirk Cousins as like somewhere between 8 to 12 in the quarterback tiers. I think that's where most people would put him. Some people might have him a little bit higher, but probably nobody's going to have him much lower than that. He's better than average. He's not elite, but he's really good. And so where does that put him in the quarterback pay scale? To me, he should be paid somewhere around the 8th to 10th best contract in the NFL. And what a lot of people didn't realize is that that's exactly what Kirk Cousins got. In total contract value, $180 million, Kirk Cousins was 10th among all the QBs with active contracts. Total guaranteed cash, and this is where some people balked, the $100 million guaranteed. That's only 13th among NFL quarterbacks. And his average yearly value for his contract, which is $45 million, is tied for 8th among NFL quarterbacks. So he's essentially being paid like the 8th to 13th best quarterback in the NFL, which seems to me absolutely right. And people need to realize this too. Kirk Cousins only has the first 2 years of this contract guaranteed. Now, while it's a lot of money guaranteed in those first 2 years, it's $100 million, if he gets hurt again this year, he sucks. You draft his replacement, and you cut him after year two, and you move on. It's not a bad contract, especially when you look at where he ranks among quarterbacks in guaranteed money. He's making less money than Matthew Stafford, Dak Prescott, and Jared Goff. Those are the three guys directly in front of him. He has the same amount of guaranteed money as Derek Carr, more guaranteed money than Daniel Jones, Aaron Rodgers, Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith. Those are the guys directly behind him. And the Aaron Rodgers thing is a little bit deceptive because Aaron Rodgers is on a 3-year deal as opposed to a 4-year deal. So Rodgers actually has the same amount of guaranteed money per year on average. So Kirk Cousins being ranked ahead of Derek Carr and Daniel Jones and Baker Mayfield in average money seems right. Him being behind Jared Goff, Dak Prescott, and Matthew Stafford seems about right. It really feels like he's exactly where he should be. And you could argue he should be above Jared Goff and Dak Prescott. You could argue that. So, again, the contract is not the issue. Now, this comes back to the other argument, which is he doesn't win playoff games. He has one career playoff win, although I will say what I've always said before. When a guy gets his team the top overall seed like he did in 2022, we should count that as a playoff win because he's bypassing a round of the playoffs because of how well he performed in the regular season. So I'm going to essentially credit him with two playoff wins, but he's been 2-3 in the playoffs. He's actually played pretty well in the playoff games that they've lost. In his three playoff games in Minnesota, he was 1-2, averaged 72% completion percentage, 229 yards a game, had 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, and led 1 game-winning drive. So it's not like he's been terrible in these games they've lost. But, you know, people overreact to quarterback wins and losses in the playoffs and treat wins and losses as a quarterback-only stat and not a team stat, which they 100% are. And I pointed out how stupid this is many times in the past by referencing how Tom Brady threw for 125 yards in his first Super Bowl win against the Rams. However, he threw for 500 yards against the Eagles and lost. So despite the fact that he played one of the best Super Bowls ever, he lost, while also winning a Super Bowl his first year as a starter, in which he basically didn't throw the ball until the end of the fourth quarter. So quarterback wins and losses in the playoffs is a dumb stat. when given without context. We have a quality quarterback who has the potential to put up elite seasons if everything falls the right way. And that includes upgrading our weapons on the outside, which we've already started doing. We dropped Jonnu Smith, which I didn't love because I thought he was super productive. But perhaps that'll mean that we will actually start giving Jonnu Smith red zone targets to Kyle Pitts, the guy that we took, you know, number four in the draft a few years ago. But we replaced Jonnu Smith with Charlie Warner, who is a blocking tight end from Georgia, who is good enough to be able to play a lot for the Super Bowl runner-up San Francisco 49ers. So he will be a designated blocking tight end who we'll have to get a little bit of receiving out of. Then we traded Desmond Ridder straight up for Rondell Moore, who is a cheap slot gadget guy that is a huge upgrade over Scotty Miller. And Rondell Moore is not a game breaker. He's a 5'7", 180-pound wiggly speedster that you can expect about 40 catches and 400 yards from. That's like his career average. That's what he hits just about every year. The one that I'm excited about that I was initially is Darnell Mooney. Y'all, I didn't know about Darnell Mooney. He's being painted as, you know, your typical stretch the field, vertical deep threat guy, but that's wrong. He is a lot more than that. Dude has unbelievable body control, fantastic concentration. He runs the entire route tree, and he makes contested catches at 5'11", 176 pounds, and he runs a 4.3. So raise your hand if you knew that Darnell Mooney had 81 catches, 4,055 yards in 2021. I didn't. And that was after a rookie year where he had 61 catches for 630 yards. That 2021 season was a mixture of Nick Foles, Andy Dalton, and rookie Justin Fields throwing him the ball. Now, once Fields took over full-time the next year, his production cratered. And there's been a stat going around Twitter, I can't remember who to credit it to, but showing that 40% of Darnell Mooney's deep targets over the last few years have been off target. And Kirk Cousins has been number one in the NFL in the highest percentage of on-target deep throws. So this seems to be like a really good marriage to improve Mooney's production. The big knock on Mooney coming out of college was drops. He had 9 drops his rookie year. Since then, in 220 targets, he's had 6. So he's the classic case of a guy being held back by quarterback play and play calling. And if Kirk is healthy, the Falcons fans are going to be blown away by just how good this guy is. Now, I'm not saying he's going to give you Julio Jones production, but like this could be like a good 70 catch, 800 yards, 6 touchdown guy to go with Drake London, who's going to have 1,000 yards, and Kyle Pitts, who might have another 800 to 1,000 yards. This could be that kind of production. And that's something to be excited about. We also added Ray-Ray McCloud, who's a return specialist. Don't get excited. He led the NFL in punt return yards in 2021, but for his career in 6 years, he's got 90 catches for 900 yards. Not going to be a factor in offense. This guy's coming in to compete with Avery Williams to be the return specialist. Because last year, what we got out of Mike Hughes was abysmal. It was terrible. So, as we wrap up this podcast, what's left for the Falcons to do in free agency? First things first, they got to clear up some cap space. According to Over the Cap, we're down to about $4 million in cap space after we spent on the first round of free agents, which is not enough to go out and get any additional impact players. Some ways they could save money: cutting Taylor Heinicke would save them $7 million, although Heinicke is a pretty solid backup option. I doubt they'd do that at this point now that they've traded Desmond Ridder. I initially thought that they would keep Ridder and cut Heinicke. But $9 million for a pretty competent backup quarterback isn't a crazy amount of money to pay. So I think Heinicke probably stays on the team unless the Falcons are able to draft a rookie that they feel really, really good about. So they could cut him and get $7 million back or restructure him. They could also cut Mike Hughes, who probably isn't going to be the starter. With D. Alford and Clark Phillips showing some flashes last year, you could go with one of them. I do think we're going to end up cutting Adia Ogundeji, which will save us about $3 million because he just hasn't produced a lot, and he was hurt last year. I can see them moving on for him and drafting his replacement. I think Zach Harrison might already be better than him. And then they could also cut Avery Williams to save about $1 million, and that's assuming that Ray-Ray McCloud beats him out. So let's say you made all those moves. You're getting back about $11 to $13 million in cap space, which is enough to go sign another impact starter. And the first person they need to look at is still, as it's been for the last 10 years, edge rusher. Now, we took a shot at Danielle Hunter, apparently offered him 3 years and $75 million, and he did not take it. He wanted to go back closer to home, which is why he went back to Houston, and they offered him a shorter contract but more guaranteed money because that was the kind of slam dunk pass rusher we needed to be shooting for. So now we're looking at second tier guys like Chase Young, Yannick Ngakoue, and Jadeveon Clowney. guys that are 8 to 10 sack guys that are going to be expensive, but they're not going to be in the $20 million range. If that is not an option, then the simple solution is to take the best pass rusher in this year's draft at number 8. So far, my evaluation, I have it as Liatu Latu from UCLA. I hope I said his name correctly. Jared Verse, my second option, and Dallas Turner, my third option. I'll explain why in another draft breakdown. I don't want to go into that right now, but that's just where I rank them. And if you have them in a different order, that's fine. One of those three at 8 is a fine option to start rebuilding your pass rush. The third thing they need to do is to find a young quarterback. Now, Kirk Cousins is good this entire contract. You're going to be drafting a young quarterback that's not going to play, which is actually probably good. But take a shot in the second round on someone like Bo Nix or Michael Penix, or later on in the draft, Spencer Rattler. Someone that's got high upside that could be the dude in the future. And start grooming that guy to be Cousins' replacement. And at the very least, his immediate backup, so that you're cheap at that position and you can move on from a contract like Taylor Heinicke, who is a competent backup but is very expensive. Fourth, you got to get at least one more good young wide receiver. At number 8, take your pick between Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers, whichever one you like best. At 43, I believe some of the other options like Brian Thomas might be gone, but some people that could be there, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin from Oregon, Devontae Walker from UNC, who, if you remember Georgia fans, tore us up in that Kent State game. That's that kid. Keon Coleman from Florida State, Adonai Mitchell from Texas. Yeah, he could be there at 43. Adonai Mitchell in most years is a first-round pick. He could be there at 43. Or Xavier Leggett from South Carolina. Those are all guys that seem to be slotted to go in that second round range. And then if you did the plan where you took maybe a quarterback at the number 43 pick in the second round, you could still push it back to the third round and take someone like Roman Wilson, Jermaine Burton, Ricky Pearsall, Malachi Corley, Xavier Worthy, Jalen Polk, Brendan Rice, Anaya Smith, or whatever other wide receiver you like that I didn't mention with the number 74 pick, because a few picks later, at 79, you get Jacksonville's pick in the third round also, so you can double down. So that pick becomes a luxury pick where you can take an item that you may not need but you really want and then get an item of need at 79 or vice versa. And the last thing I want the Falcons to do this offseason is to find another safety. Richie Grant has, there's no other way to say it, he's underachieved in his first 3 years to the point where he was benched for a seventh-round pick, DeMarco Helms, at the end of last year. And I still believe in my really high evaluation of Grant's talent, but he just hadn't produced. And this year's free agent class is loaded with high-level starting safeties. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Jordan Poyer, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, Justin Simmons, Micah Hyde, Marcus May. Those are all former Pro Bowlers. And a few of them are on the wrong side of 30, but any of them would be a massive upgrade over what the Falcons trotted out this past year, and none of them are going to be expensive. None of them. If you open that $11 million window, you could fit one of those guys right in next to Jesse Bates and let's roll. Instant upgrade to the secondary. So, Falcons fans, for the first time in a while, we have real reason for optimism. It's not just hoping and praying on an unproven coach and an unproven quarterback like it has been the last couple of years. We've actually got a proven quarterback and a coach who at least is a known. Even if he hasn't been successful, he's at least a known. I think there's a lot of reason for optimism as we move forward into the NFL draft. One quick programming note, I am planning to be at UJ football practice next week, so our next podcast will hopefully be in about 10 days with an update on everything I saw from UGA's spring practice. This has been Dave with A for the Title Run Sports Podcast. That's it for today. Rise up, and thank you for listening.